Hey, Ramblers, let's get rambling.
Now where it is now, everybody wants a piece of the market.
Oh my God, that is funny!
I don't remember asking you a thing.
A funny how? I mean funny like I'm a clown, I amuse you?
With all due respect, what the are you talking about?
Oh, I'm sorry, did I break your concentration?
What the is so funny about me? Tell me. Tell me what's funny.
You represent the idiocy of today.
I did not know that.
English, motherfucker, do you speak it?
Are you listening to me?
How's my shit together?
Nice personality combination, hostile and intolerant.
So that's it then. No one else really knows anything.
Well, North Bay Station Jacks, I'm Tim Al. We have Ricardo on the board. We have Greg Pappas in studio. We'll have John Flanagan later. We'll have Nancy later. So, big show today. We might even have Mr. Mike Murphy pile in if he wants to talk a little bit about Olympics. Wild end of the ladies' basketball. SPV is up 10, NASA is up 40. Did you see the girls' basketball game?
Missed that one.
Oh, God. What am I going to do with you? You're a sports guy, you know. Girl took, they kept fouling our girls. They were winning the whole way when I say they, France. Winning pretty much the whole way. We came back and then they fouled somebody and she put the shots in. They were down four. Comes back and Lady Wings went in from out there right through. Swisheroo from France. Sent her down one again. The girl comes back, makes the two free throws. They wing one to this girl in the middle. She shoots, but her toe is on the line and banks it in.
Oh, nice.
So they lose by 1 point because she was about 2 inches away from it being a three.
In practice.
Yeah. What's up? But, I mean, it was a great game. Of course, a couple of the girls, stars in the French team, are really from here. But I thought the just when you go to prove a point to the
Did you see Steph Curry? Cool.
Yeah.
Absolutely. He went bananas and then decided to take on that double team at the end of the game and drain that three to ice the game.
Well, there you go. When it comes down to what's the point, I'm going to have to shove some of the top 10 out of there. What was so important about making these people swim in that dirty-ass river over there, the Seine? Now they've got three people in the German team are sick.
Well, you know, they spent so much money trying to clean it up, wanted to make sure that somebody used it.
What did the mayor jump? Not jumped in. He eased in with a wetsuit up to like his knees or something, and said it was okay.
Yeah, talk about leading by example.
Yeah, they still, you know, they were supposed to do this race in the Chicago River this year. I can't think of anything more disgusting. So they end up getting turned down by somebody. They're appealing the decision.
Well, what supposedly the river has gotten a lot better.
First of all, when you say a river, you know what it is defined.
Okay, sorry, drainage canal.
Drainage canal. I'm not going to debate that. It has gotten a lot better, but from what end?
I mean, there's significant studies being done on the wildlife that have repopulated the drainage canal. So,
the only way you could make it clean, and I don't think you can do this legally because of a Supreme Court decision. I've made a study of the Chicago rivers, believe it or not, because the history of Chicago is really the history of water management because of the unusualness of the topography here. I don't know if you know where I'm going with this, but essentially a black dirt on top of clay. So the first 2 inches of rain in the area, you know, there's areas that are different, first 2 inches of rain settles into the ground and really doesn't run anywhere. The next 2 inches, like 80% of it runs through the river. Once it hits the clay barrier, it can't absorb anymore. It just goes. That's why there was always flooding and stuff, and why there's swampy areas. But when the river course was reversed, there were no locks yet. So the water just poured in from Lake Michigan. Dilution, dilution, dilution. It actually was like a 3-mile-an-hour current running downriver. So then the Supreme Court said, no, you guys can't do that anymore. You can only take a certain amount of water out of the lake because everybody else was bitching. So they put the locks in. If they really wanted to clean it up for like a week or so, you could just open the locks.
So if you open the locks...
You flush everything out for like a week or two. But I don't think you can do that legally. See, we're always thinking...
Well, now we got the deep tunnel, so at least that helps.
You know what? That started when I was in high school.
It's a nice jobs program.
Was it Tunney Construction? It's the world's best civil engineering long-term job, like in the history of mankind.
Not so bad.
That was 1967 it started. It's like three generations of Tunneys.
Yeah.
And one guy ended up being ambassador to Ireland under Clinton.
One job to the next.
Yeah, one to the next. All right, what's going on? Last week was crazy. Up, down, up, down. We ended up pretty much unchanged.
Are the futures up this
morning? Futures are up 11, NASDAQ up 43.
There we go.
We're nudging a little
back.
We're back. Like Michael Jordan, we're back. So my question is, in your life, first of all, I want you to give us the commodity report. But secondly, when you start seeing moves like this, my instinct tells me it is a sign of an unhealthy market. You don't make 2 and 3% moves every day. People getting out of the way on the way up, people getting out of the way on the way down. That's usually long-term bull markets are boring.
We're a little more uncertain this week than we were couple weeks.
But most of the time, bull markets are low volatility, creeps up every day, don't know why, starts down a little low, finishes a little up, and it's like nails on a chalkboard grinding away. This is weird. When you can be down on Monday or Tuesday, what was it, Monday morning, we almost had a crash. We come flying back. And I've been reading, and I probably will bore everybody this week a little bit. When you read something a second time, how much more you pick up? I'm reading this book on what happened in 1929. It's a financial history of
crash
the year.
Porn?
Well, yeah, it's sort of like crash porn. But it all comes down to, and you go back to look at the tulips, it all comes down to credit. And you should read this because you're very familiar with how this works, because in 1929, your securities margin works the same as commodity margin now.
Huh.
So you had to pony up money all day long if stuff was coming down. There was no... Right now, for those... Everybody should probably know this by now, but if you call up PTI and you say, hey, I want to buy 1,000 shares of IBM, which is, we'll close at 191.45, I don't know where it's going to open. Say you paid 190 for it. 1,000 shares, that's 190 grand. You've got to send us a check for 95,000. You don't have to send the whole 91.
Yay, margin.
But the difference is, if it starts to go down...
In the securities world, you call the credit margin.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But but on the way down, say it goes down $3 today, you don't have to send us the $3,000. Because the maintenance margin is only 30 versus the initial margin being 50. So there's a cushion in there. Now, on the commodity side, there is no cushion. And in 1929, Greg, I don't know if you knew this or not, there was no cushion. So, the availability...
Get the feeling that's why they made the cushion.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Duh. Very, very good, son. Yeah. It was like in 1933 that he said, well, that's part of the problem.
Class dismissed.
And so it was all about who's going to put up the margin so people could borrow more and buy. So it was a fight between the banks, but as the day wore on, the cost of the margin went up. So if you had a bad day like May 26th that year, it was March or May 26th, which was like the predecessor to the big crash, as the day wore on, the margin loan rate went from 10 to 15 to 20% in a period of like 3 hours. So if you wanted to buy on the dip, you had to pay up huge on the margin.
You had to squeeze, yeah. So there's a cascading effect as it gets worse on the way down.
Yes.
Which in option terms is called gamma.
So what do you suppose happened to save the margin world as the banks were gagging on it?
You just make so that you can grant more margin.
Other companies were allowed to give margin loans.
There we go.
Cascading effect as it gets worse on the way down.
Yeah.
It's in option terms.
We're hearing ourselves twice, Ricardo. What are we doing over there?
Close that window. I think I know what's going on.
My bad, guys.
All right,
you should be good now.
All right, well, we're back. I don't know if we're good. You know, we're back. Good is a relative term. So your firms like GMG started piling in to give margin loans. And kept doing it the rest of the year because we're also making 15, 20%.
Right.
So can you imagine now if your margin loans were all spread around like regular outfits? And on top of everybody else?
You know, I'm not a big user of margin, so... besides the work stuff that has... You know, we're
well, that's covered. Why, even though PTI is not a very large firm, I like to put it in the same words as Merrill Lynch and stuff, we're a very good firm, but we're not that big.
At least you're in business.
Well, but clearing firms love us, because we don't...
You don't pull any of their margin that they're...
No, we actually have huge cash balances.
Right.
They can lend out to other people.
Bingo.
Yeah. When our people, we have a few people that, you know, take some money out or something they need it for this or that, but we really don't have the person that says, buy me 100 shares IBM, by the way, what's the minimum check I can send you? I mean, that's the Robin Hoods and those guys, the kind of guys. Speaking of which...
They're not... Their systems are failing this week still? They're not allowed to trade overnight?
I've been putting through a little push lately for people to do it. I really don't do a lot of this.
Here's a question. Are you laughing when you see that stuff cross the wire?
No.
No?
No, because if there's a huge screw-up in the system, it'll affect everybody.
Oh.
Not to mention the fact that...
As a good operator, I would think you just look at that, shake your head, and say, well...
Well, what I was going to ask, since I know you use it...
They're terrible operators.
I'm going to say that why more people, especially... I think they trust me and Dan and you. Why more people don't use our PTI Pro Direct platform, which is IB, which I think...
It's new, big, and scary.
But it's probably... I'm going to... Well, you know, I've never tried to use the Robinhood system, but I'm going to say it's better than their system.
It's way better.
Because you use it. That's all I'm asking.
Yeah. Yeah. Why is it better? Well, A, you get better fills, which is the most important. It's not as cool looking like a video game like Robinhood has, but that's because it's not designed like a video game. It's designed like a trading platform and a professional trading platform instead of a video game. But it is easier to learn trading on something like Robinhood because they make it like a slot machine slash, it's much more.
Well, you do have to take a couple of the little webinars for the IB.
Well, no, I know how to use it.
Right.
It's just...
No, I'm not saying you. Somebody new would have
somebody
to
learn. Somebody new would probably want to watch the YouTube videos first and then jump in, whereas on those systems where they sell your orders and they give you terrible fills. But it's really easy to say, hey, this is what a straddle is, and maybe you want to sell it. I don't know.
Well, I'm saying is Schwab's had some issues the last couple of weeks.
Schwab's
too.
Had a ton of issues integrating with TD, and their systems have been almost inoperable for some of those periods.
What I've been recommending is
garbage.
If people like to do their own trading, they could sign up at PTI Pro Direct, which is the same thing as IB. The only difference is if you
Pro
have
Direct
a problem, you can call
layers,
us.
Yeah, layers the or uses the back end of Interactive Brokers, which is probably the best fills you can get out there.
It's the most professional thing out there.
Yeah, yeah.
Which means it's a little less user-friendly maybe, but once you get the hang of it, it's pretty
I was
good.
Relieved last week that nothing went down with that because, you know, as everything else is looking like terrible and you're not allowed to log in or it crashes or they don't have the margin balance or... All sorts of weirdo reasons they quit trading and they cut people off last week. IB did stay up, so props to them.
Well, plus, if you have money there and all of a sudden you say, you know what, I either have a concentration issue, I want to do some of the stuff protected, or I want to do some fixed income, all it takes a phone call and I can help you out with or my firm, PTI, can help you out with...
Who made that call? Was that you or Dan?
Which one?
To build on IB,
good, interesting question.
Are you allowed to answer that question?
Yeah, okay. Well, I can answer it. Actually, one of the worst things that happened to PTI, we used to clear at Mesro, and one of the nicest, greatest men I ever met was Jim Tyree, who ran Mesro. And when he was alive, I was in the Economic Club of Chicago, and we were buddies. We'd go to all the meetings. And Jimmy was one of these, there's a few people on earth that no matter, the guy had a million things going, right? Brilliant man. He's the one who basically kept Marist High School together. He said, By the way, I'm coming up with all the money, but you guys are going to go co-ed because we had lost a lot of their areas where they were drawing students from. So they said, okay, Marist is now doing spectacularly well. I mean, Jimmy saved Marist High School. He was on the board of University of Chicago, a bunch of other places. Anyway, he died unexpectedly, and Mesro just folded up their correspondent clearing business. So we had a pretty nice platform for our clients to trade through Mesro. So we would do our stuff, and they would do their stuff, and it worked out great. Well, then they said, well, we're out of the clearing business. We ended up going to RBC, which has a lot of serious advantages. One of them not is that people can't really trade their own account. But for the stuff I do for people, for managing, their sets of rules and their commission rates are way better for what I do for people. But it's a horrible platform for you to put trades in yourself. So we said, okay, we need something else. So we went to IB. At the time, one of the guys, one of my better friends, Billy McGowan, was working at IB. And he goes, oh, yeah, we'll set you guys up here. So basically, if you use us, PTI Pro Direct, you're using IB. The only difference is if you're stuck somewhere and you can't get into the darn thing, you can call us. Right? IB's not real happy if you call them.
Right.
They're not. And if you do find them, they want like $75 to put a trade in for you, which we're not going to do if you're a client. You know, so, but I mean, so essentially you have IB with some help.
Yeah.
But also in there, because Dan Janitas uses IB, and so do we, you can say, well, I want to put, you know, say you're a big guy, got $10 million in there, or one, whatever it is. And I decide I want to put $2 million in fixed income. I want Dan to manage it. Dan can be managing it tomorrow morning. Or if he says, well, you know, I really got this huge concentration issue in Apple or whatever it happens to be, I want to, you know, maybe get some puts against it or sell some calls against it, but I don't want to do it. You can do it. I can do that tomorrow. So you can switch real quick in that system. But if you just do your own stuff, like I said, I think it's better than just about these other guys because it's always up.
Yeah, it definitely is up. And the more important thing is the fills are probably the best.
Well, they also pay way more on cash balances than anybody else.
Yeah.
I mean, way more. So, how do we fix that at RBC? Dan goes to the auction every week, and we put people in T-bills. So, it's a little more work on our part, but...
So when Schwab, did Schwab assume TD, or...
They're trying to... Plus, they were, then who else did they buy that they were trying to... TD had also just bought, was it Tasty Trade or something? They were trying to get those guys involved, so they got like three systems over there. That's a problem.
Oh, is that merge now? TD... Well,
was a long time ago.
That wasn't
Tasty. What was the first one that those guys did? Option something something? I don't know.
Options House or...
Whatever it was.
I know that Interactive Brokers, their market cap was like... What was it? I think it was above 30 or 40 billion.
Oh, yeah.
Probably higher now. But Schwab assumed... I think they merged with TD.
Yeah, they did too.
And then they started integrating their trading systems in their platform.
It's always a problem.
And like, good luck. I mean, it's been all the people, at least you know who have their personal accounts and stuff there that I trade with are pissed. Excuse the French, but I guess it doesn't matter now because they're so big that
you're so big. And people, they're so good. You know, it used to be a gentlemanly world in some ways. It was, in a lot of ways, it was never a gentlemanly world. But simple stuff now, if somebody comes over to PTI and says, okay, I want to come with you guys, either RBC or at the IB platform. Now, IB, you've got to do pretty much all on your own, except Larry will help you through it.
Yeah.
So you know, you got to sign up. It is online.
They're clearing, or what's it called? They're... FCM?
Yeah.
Yeah, so you're introducing, and they're the clearing.
Right.
Yeah.
Because you also can do, when you sign up there, you also can do futures.
That's why they are more focused on, if anybody's wondering, that's why they're more focused on dealing, they'd rather deal with introducing brokers than customers.
Well, no, it's the customers have to be, they expect them to be almost like professional traders. I mean, it's a serious platform.
Yeah.
I mean, we can put in all kinds of spreads, all kinds of stuff, and you can do a lot of what-ifs. And I mean, we've used it a lot.
Interactive Brokers originally started as the brokerage firm, and then they would test a lot of their features, and they would build out stuff, and I believe it was called Timber Hill.
Yeah. Those are the guys I traded with on Trading Floor all the time.
Yeah. because Timber Hill would use a lot of their electronics.
Yeah, they had all kinds of people on the floor.
So they, yeah, they were at the intersection of kind of how the technology was enabled the traders.
The only issue they had, they're the guys that sold the oil under zero.
Whoops.
Because they have this thing called Credit Man, or whatever they call it, the risk manager thing, and it just puked people out under zero. They had a big oopsie with that, but how many years ago was that? That was not good.
Yeah, when it went to negative 37.
Yeah. Anyway, what do you make of, we're going to be talking about some economic theory with John, because Carl brought some issues up last week. I mean, Carl, you know, I discussed with Carl, we're always jousting back and forth, but there's a lot of really good information you get, I think, because if a lot of what I try and do with my clients, or client, not clients, well, the clients too, but basically with the people on the show, is everybody here has got a lot of knowledge, even you. Getting it out of your head sometimes is difficult. I mean, not
if
you
it's
personally.
It's not clear.
I'm saying people, yeah. they have knowledge they don't exactly even know they have, so it's my job to drag it out so everybody else could use it to trade or something. You know, I mean, because you know more about the way the commodities work and the margins and all that stuff than anybody, but getting it out of you sometimes like pulling a tube. But that's the way people are. Same thing with me. I mean, you know, unless somebody asks me the question, I don't know what anybody wants to hear. But what do you make of, I was hearing this weekend, matter of fact, I was thinking of you driving along, somebody was talking about, now Governor Pritzker, you know, I'm not into this style of government. Where
fearless
you,
leader?
Well, you tax the hell out of people, and then you, whatever you think is a good program, you wing money at them. I mean, that's, government has to do some of that, but it's becoming, you know, that's one of the reasons why I'm not happy with the Democratic Party. That's just not the way the world is. Just because you think it's a good idea, there's always people in the middle that catch half of that money. And I don't like the people in the middle. That's just me. But
good thing they don't really vote that much.
Well, they're ponying up a whole bunch of money now to research what else you can do with corn, because they think if electric cars are all over the place, oops, what's going to happen to the ethanol business?
Right. What? And so now you kind of try to force feed it into the aviation industry and sustainable aviation fuel and.
Oh no, we're gonna have a solar panel on top of a 747 and just fly by electric.
Have you seen the building proposal from Skidmore, Owings, and Merrill about like the giant building battery? That's pretty cool.
Oh god,
I gotta put that on the show notes or something.
All right, explain to me, Lucy, why you've been out to Vegas?
Of course.
You ever going out to Hoover Dam?
I did not. See, I was too hungover.
No, see, now you're kind of. I got a story about that. There used to be a DC-10.
Weren't you the one who said the Hoover Dam isn't called the Hoover Dam?
It's still Hoover Dam. It went back to Boulder Dam for a while, but now it's back to Hoover Dam. It's bounced back and forth.
Oh, I thought it was. He just kind of decided to take credit for it.
Yeah,
yeah.
But then they made it Boulder Dam for a while. Now I think it's been Hoover Dam for a long time again.
Oh.
Anyway, the. They had a DC-10 that came back and like 1 o'clock or 2 o'clock on Sunday, and it was always jammed with people going back from Vegas. DC-10 was a big plane, and everybody in Arizona, they're just getting over the hangover pretty much, and some weren't. But so all of a sudden I'm in the middle seat, and somebody starts pounding the back of my seat. And who the hell is that? I turn around, it's this buddy of mine. His name's Rich Mackey. He's a terrific guy, and he worked for one of the insurance firms here. They decided to have a Las Vegas office, so they send Mike out there.
I wonder why.
Yeah, well, I guess with the firm was the one the guy went to jail was a Near North or River North, whatever it was. Remember those guys?
The same firm that decided to open up the Las Vegas office for
reason. Well, you know, was a big partner. It was George Dunn. The guy was a county commissioner.
Oh, so it's another shocker.
Well, anyway, he says. He orchestrates a stag party out there.
I'd like to see the write-offs list on company.
Oh, God. He orchestrates a stag party. And of course, because he's out there, he ends up with a couple of these big suites and stuff. And I don't want to go into that part of it. But I go, what was the... He goes, these guys are out of control. And I go, what was the worst story? He goes, you'll never believe this. He goes, I get this call at like 8:30 on Sunday morning that one of our guys is out at Hoover Dam. He doesn't know how to get back. So I had to run a car and go get the guy. I go, what happened? He goes, the guy stumbles out of like Caesar's Palace or someplace with a drink in his hand, and there's a cab there. And his family, you know, guy, wife, and kid are getting in the back seat to go out to see Hoover Dam. He pops in the front seat. So the family thinks he's with the cab driver. He starts BSing with the cab driver. And the cab driver thinks he's with the family. He's just drinking his drink, riding out with the family. He gets out there, and they drop him off, and he has no idea where. So he calls Mike up, and he goes, I don't know where I'm at. It looks like there's a big lake on one side and an awful lot of concrete.
Yeah, that's one way to do it.
Why can't I go get him? But anyway, it's pretty fantastic. And right next to it, I mean, well, the whole area is, you know, arid. It's the middle of nowhere. On one side, looking, I'm going to say southwest, there's this valley that is got to be as flat as this desk we're sitting on. As far as the eye can see to the mountains way in the distance. I'm talking, it has to be 40 miles of just flat. I don't even think a lizard can live out there. And it's right next to the power lines, unrelenting sunshine. You would think there'd be 40 million solar panels there piling into the high wires that come from Hoover Dam anyway because it makes electricity.
None?
There isn't a one.
Oh.
What is...
can fix that.
Yeah, yeah, people are going to put them on their roof here
we
in Chicago. It's where it's cloudy half the time.
Yeah.
Man, you know,
that makes sense.
Is there any common sense anywhere in this stuff? It seems like not. S&P futures up 12, NASDAQ futures up 48. The backlist, we have Mr. Jen complaining and talk about this credit card debt plus some of the interesting stuff Carl and I were talking about. It really takes a shot at economic theory in a lot of ways. And maybe we'll go through that with you and Jen, who's more of an everyman look. Be right back, Stocks and Jacks.
Hello, this is Tom Howe, the Chief. I think most of you know that I'm also the Chief Investment Officer at PTI Securities and Futures. There we invest for and help a wide variety of clients. And you know what? No two are the same. Some have legacy stocks, some concentration issues, some maybe embedded tax issues. The others might need or want some portfolio protection. There could be estate issues or maybe new family members. The point is that we are all unique and the portfolios should match. However, the last several years have seen a relatively one-way market. It seemed that all we needed was to be all in. No protection, no fixed income, just be all in, no matter who you are, what your risk profile or age. Most management firms love that. Take this and like it, no matter who you are. Be careful with that. You are not everybody. I think most see the market view going forward as maybe different than the one looking back, so your portfolio should reflect that. Maybe it's just as simple as your life station has changed. Towards that end, we are accepting some new clients needing a more personal approach and are interested in negotiating the future and not with a portfolio designed for the past. Find me at 312-663-4310. That's 312-663-4310.
Stocks, jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
Stocks and jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now, right here. Right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stocks and Jacks. I'm Tom Howe, Ricardo on the board. Greg Pappas in studio. Should have Janet Flanagan in a second. S&P futures up 11. NASDAQ futures up 42. Again, last week was a rack'em and sack'em week. We'll see if that... What do you make of these... we'll talk about these Stellantis layoffs. I guess it was sort of coming because it's an older truck... style, but anyway, I'm into trucks. Dow futures are up 70. Over in Europe, we have the quiet here, but to the upside. The DAX up 43.2%, FTSE up 49.6%, France up 1, so call that flat. I'd say a very successful Olympics. Asia, Nikkei up 193, it's 0.5%, 35,025, back up over 35,000. Hang Seng up 21, let's call that one flat, but hanging over 17,000, 17,111. Shanghai down 3, let's call that flat. 2858, still under 2900 by kind of a ways. Friday, Dow up 51, S&P up 24, NASDAQ up 85, up, but kind of probably the quietest day of the week. Bonds up 1 basis point, 3.96, back toward 4%, which last week sure didn't look like they were going to do. The Bund up 3 basis points, 2.25, Japan up 1 basis point, 0.86. Oil, which has been at the lower end of the range, is creeping up. Up 94 cents, 77.78. It got below 75, and it was up to 83. So it's been that range. I'm going to say the range 73 to 83. So in there, Brent up 79 cents, 80.45. Natural gas up 9 cents, 2.23. Was under $2 last Thursday. So that's a pretty good move in there. That's almost a 5% move today. Natural gas must have a forecast out for a cold winter or something. Arbob up 2 cents, 2.41. Gold up 7.20, 24.80. Up 0.3%. Silver up 43 cents. That's 1.5%. 2802. That's good. We're long some silver. Copper up 5 cents. 405. Foreign exchange. We got the euro still right at 109.2. 109 even almost. British pound. Same thing. 127.6. Japanese yen down to 147.59. We got up to 143, down to 167, 163 again. They quote the Japanese yen differently. Instead of dollars per pound, it's yen per dollar. So you got to remember that when you talk about that. A crypto down $27, so let's call that one flat. 59,728. We have forced traffic, weather, sports, no baseball. An unusual Sunday day off for Cubs and Science.
Yeah, actually. But good morning, Chief. It's currently 6:36 a.m. here in beautiful Chicago. 59 degrees right now with a high of 79. Partly sunny, and tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 66. Over to Phoenix, Arizona, 89 degrees right now with a high of 106. Mostly cloudy and very warm. Tonight will be mostly cloudy as well with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's, we're looking at 14 minutes. 31 minutes inbound Edens from Lane Cook. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 26 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 13 minutes. And inbound Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 26 minutes. Sports in the MLB yesterday. Only the Diamondbacks played out of the three teams that we usually talk about on this segment. The Diamondbacks beat the Phillies, though, 12-5. And today we got a couple of games. Cubs played the Guardians at 5:40 p.m. White Sox played the Yankees at 7:10 p.m. And the Diamondbacks played the Rockies at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, the 2024 Summer Olympics are in session right now, and the medal tracker states that the U.S. is leading, number one with 126 medals. Number two is China with 91 medals. And Great Britain is kicking France off the top three with 65 medals. That's all I got for you, Chief.
Back well, they're you. Done. They're done yesterday. That's it. That's your final count.
Oh, that's it?
Yep, that's it.
Oh, well, there you go.
They're all wandering around last night in the stadium, and wow. one guy, he's no dummy. He was there putting the big moves on Katie Ledecky.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I'd say go for it, bud. She's a doll. She's
yeah,
terrific.
Cool. Actually, my home country brought home two medals, and one of them is a gold medal,
In what?
I think it's called trap shooting or something. It's like when you shoot the frisbee with the shotgun.
Well, it's not a frisbee. It's a whatever they call it. What is the thing?
Well,
it's a name for it.
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, it's a
clay pigeon.
Yeah, it's like a clay pigeon or something.
Oh yeah, that thing. Yeah.
You know, we could do something like that. I still think we could do curling.
The PTI curling team.
Yeah. Well, you guys are the young guys. You have to be the sweepers. I'd be the guy shoving the rock.
All right.
You're not going to get me sweeping and fall on my ass.
U.S. had 3,000 medals total so far in the Olympics.
That's a lot. Well, now, the basketball team, everybody gets a gold medal, right?
Yeah.
So how many do they actually give out?
The whole team.
I know, but I mean...
Staff.
Same thing with the relay, you get some, and soccer team, you get a lot of them there. That's me. That's a lot. We have Mr. Flanning. I hear him grumping in the background. Johnny,
yeah,
what is...
Can you hear me, Tom?
How are you, bud? We're doing a bunch of stuff here. We're talking about credit card debt. I just want to, what do you make of these Stellantis layoffs? For those that haven't seen this, there were the Dodge, Stellantis, whatever you want to call them, kept their old style pickup truck in production for a while as a entry level model for people that like on farms and actually want a pickup truck and not some whatever the thing is, $85,000 model. They decided to stop doing that, so they're laying off 2,450 people in Warren, Michigan, forever. There you go. They've not allowed. So here's one truck you could probably get cheaper than the rest, and we don't do that anymore, right? Why would we want something you could actually use as a truck for commercial and things like that? God, we don't want that, do we? Why would we want that? Anyway, John, if we had a chance to, and Greg, Carl and I were having our usual animated discussion on Friday regarding the.
That spilled over into email.
Yeah, well, yeah, spilled over in email. And it's, when you get right down to it, we're arguing about an economic, I won't say principle, but an economic, well, I guess it is, sort of. It has to do with efficiency and movement. And everybody knows that once in a while I'll criticize and say, gee, don't act like you're an endowed professor. Don't worry, this will work. It'll all be okay 20 years from now when I'm still getting paid and you're still laid off. I mean, you can't go down that road. But you also can't go down a road where...
It's called the Fed special.
Yeah, it's called like the... Well, so in a nutshell, if I can describe it, there's been so much mess, I'll say mess, in how much the medical establishment is sucking out of people that it's unconscionable. Okay, and it has to do with they can only do it because of patent laws and because of combinations and because of insurance, people don't pay stuff directly. So those are kind of the three villains in this, whatever it is, plot, if you want to say, in my opinion. So,
and we are significantly
bigger
than
the
foreign counterparts.
Well, but so, you know, you come out with, say, the, what's the fatso drug?
Ozempic.
The lady wrote, and I still have it here somewhere, I sent it out to everybody. She said at $5 of shot, they'd make money, and yet they charge $1,000 a shot. Now, this colossus has gotten so big that it's 21% of the economy. And the patent laws, we have a long day, Jen, talking about patent laws and whether we should just get rid of them. I'm almost at the stage where, well, I had a teacher at Notre Dame. Remember Father, what was his name, Flanagan? Is that his name, Flanagan?
Father May I?
No, he was a patent laws and things like that, because that's where his expertise was. And he was of the opinion that every single patent worth of crap had been stolen anyway, so we're better off without the laws. I mean, they've never been enforced right. And the enforcement is all on you. I mean, it's a totally screwed up system, even though most people would say, hey, you invent the hula hoop, you get to sell it. I mean, there's nothing wrong with the theory, but the theories never quite work properly. Anyway, but my point being is that now this $1,000 instead of $100, or say $100, I won't say $5, there's $900 extra there. Now, Carl's point is that, now me being, I think I'm more of a theoretical economist than Carl is, that doesn't make me better or worse, I'm just saying that my view is going to come from that direction. My view would be that all of a sudden that sort of efficiency, I'm not a professor, but it's not going to take 20 years. That if all of a sudden the people that are paying a grand can get away paying $100, or for a chemo drug, if it's instead of $2,500, if it's $250, which a lot of them I think should be, that hunk of cash is now going to stay in the hands of those people and be used for something else. That you wouldn't find restaurants closing at 8:30 on a Saturday night if all that money was back in the system, in my opinion. Now, a firm like PTI that was, you know, paying $2,500 a month for people's insurance or something, it'll take a while before, if this all gets, quote, fixed, it'll take a while before we're paying $1,500 or $1,200. I know it's not going to happen tomorrow. Now, Carl's point is, if we stop this tomorrow, which we should, there would be this massive recession as all these people get thrown out of work or don't make as much. And, you know, I don't
hate
know.
To see it.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
You'd hate to see
it. I'd hate to see it, yeah. But I'm saying I say that with tongue in cheek. But, I mean, the point, I don't know that.
All those medical representatives.
Yeah, yeah, wouldn't that be all the outfits that the incredible good-looking ladies go around and sell drugs to doctors, all the outfits that have to go back to Old Navy?
Actually working?
Yeah, they have to go back to Old Navy and buy blue jeans or whatever. But there would be a transition of some kind. But I don't. Plus, I'm not sure, Jan, where do you think this money goes? And Greg, too. When I say Jan, I'm meaning Greg, too. It's not like if the money goes to Pfizer, okay, and they run a lean ship and they pay out, you know, vociferous dividends to the population, the money didn't go anywhere, it just gets spread around, right? And the person shouldn't be paying that much, but by the way, it comes right back into the system. But I don't know that the chairman, I don't know this, if the chairman of Pfizer takes a chunk for himself and is building some, you know, 3.5 mile long yacht in Sweden for himself, well, then the money doesn't come back. So I'm not sure exactly how you could, in the world of international stuff with these drug companies, where they were the first people to go offshore, right, and do their stuff and the profits are offshore.
Yeah.
So it's very difficult to follow who would exactly benefit or hurt from this. When I say that, the first company to go offshore and bring their crap offshore was an outfit called, is it Forest Labs, Jen? They went to Bermuda, and here's what they did, and how our government, your government, Greg's government, allowed this crap to happen. They formed a subsidiary, I think in Bahamas, or some damn place, put their patents, this is why I'm so ragged off against patents, put their patents offshore, and then lease the patents back from the offshore sub putting all the profits overseas where they didn't pay tax on them. Now, these are U.S. patents that they put overseas, paid rent to the place so they didn't have to pay taxes here. Now, is it just me from the South Side, or is there something seriously wrong with that?
Seriously wrong, yeah.
And I think everybody followed them, and then they got taken over by somebody. Greg, just...
Allergan.
They did? Was it Allergan? You're looking at it, Greg?
I think so.
Anyway, how much of a... If it all happened tomorrow, which it wouldn't, and all of a sudden people started paying, I use the term market price for this stuff, the huge sucking sound that would come out of that industry, other people would have it in their hands immediately. Well, it wouldn't be immediate if insurance is paying for most of it. I don't think it would take that long, Jen, and for all of a sudden the money would go to other people in other areas. I mean, it wouldn't be tomorrow. I mean, there would be an issue, like Carl says, but do you think that the market, that our system here, our alleged free market system, which is a pipe dream in most areas, do you think is that screwed up, or we'd be in a recession for like 2 years while these people got other jobs or something? I don't know. I mean, I think the money back in other people's pockets would mean right away there wouldn't be that big of a... And that's really what Carl and I were arguing about, even though I didn't define it this way. It's how quickly would it happen? I mean, instead of you paying, I'm not saying you're on this, I don't think you are, instead of paying $1,000 for your fatso drug, you're paying $100. Well, that's $900 in your pocket. I mean, it's not like it's gone. It's just not going to them. It's going somewhere else, right?
Right. I think it would happen pretty fast.
Even in today's world, where is it going to go to people that are now making more machine parts here in this country and in other places? Is it going to go into investment so the plumber can now borrow 4.5% for his, or 5% for his new truck? Or is he
still going to be paying 10? It'd be interesting if it went to more food.
Well, I'm saying it's going
to
go...
It's easier to get skinny, but it's... Then well, you just eat more food with
I was going to say, would the restaurant be open later at night? That's not the example I want to
yeah,
use.
Yeah, it's true.
But
what would we do? Probably more of the same.
But is the system so screwed up?
Yes.
I guess is my question, that even though, because one of the you know, the identities in all of economics, okay, is savings equal investment. Okay, if people make $100 a week, live on 80, and put 20 in the bank, okay, that 20 is now able to be borrowed by somebody else, and when they borrow it, it's called investment, correct? So savings equals investment has been an economic identity since, you know, the Romans were around, or the Greeks maybe. No shot there, Greg, the Greeks.
Yeah, they're great with...
But if all of a sudden this guy's... We're talking today that most people have $6,500. The average credit card balance is $6,500. All of a sudden you cut out, you lower the price of some of this medical stuff, and in 6 months the average balance would be, say, $2,500. Now, that's a positive.
That would be okay. A miracle.
No, that's a positive. And now the banks would be looking to loan to somebody else. Now, who's the somebody else? Does that mean if we wanted to open up 3 hot dog stands, we could get a loan from a bank? Or they're still going to try and say, we're not giving it to you, we're only giving it to somebody else? I mean, I guess the answer here, John, and I don't know the answer, but that's why I don't like both of you guys' opinion. How bad has I'll use the term market system, been messed with to the point where you can't even predict how soon or when the benefit would occur?
Well, the system is corrupt on a couple different levels, I think, Tom. And just to go back to patents for a second, this drug, I can't even remember who the manufacturer is, Skyrizi, which, you know, it was originally pitched as the drug for treatment of plaque psoriasis. And they have a jingle for it. They have little, you know, story lines, these ads. All of a sudden now I notice this drug is being pitched for Crohn's disease.
Yeah.
And I would bet that involves a separate patent. You know, just as one might be coming off of patent, they've got another stranglehold.
I don't think you need a separate patent for a different purpose, do you?
Well, if there
was... Ozempic was originally diabetes.
Drug companies would do it because... they clearly have conducted studies where they think they know that these drugs have multi-purposes, and I don't think they'd be doing that because it weakens their patent. I think it strengthens it. So.
Well, it's 17 years, so you got a lot of times to play with it. To find a use for it, let's put it that way, is what you're talking about.
Well, and by the time 17 years rolls around, they might find another purpose for it again. So all of a sudden, you got these rolling. I would bet it doesn't develop another patent. I can't imagine.
I don't think you know. The only way you can trick one up like again, where's a patent attorney when we need one? But the one that's your would-be girlfriend, the lady that did the $600 for the EpiPens because they found a new cap for it.
Shkreli?
Yeah, they found a new cap for it. And they got a patent for the delivery system, but the patent wasn't for the drug inside or anything like that. It was, in fact, the thing was designed. Well, the other issue I want to kind of go into a little bit is when somebody gives up a patent, they don't seek to find anybody else who contributed it towards it. I mean, if Greg, you know, instead of getting his license in the place, it'll limit up if all of a sudden he's a gazillionaire because he caught the corn limit up someday, and he gives $1 million to research at Northwestern for some drug, and all of a sudden the thing does exceptionally well, I don't think somebody somehow gains the patent for that drug. I don't think that anybody says, hey, you got to give Greg something, you got to give our friend Katie who worked on it some, you got to give Northwestern some. I think if you get it, you get it. And again, that's one of the reasons why I'm not so happy with the patent laws. I mean, I don't think you have to share with that stuff. Once you get it, nobody cares about who actually did it, do they?
Oh, I don't think so.
I'm saying it's a big, huge mess, but the crux of the discussion was, if there's, quote, a fix, the reason why
aren't there different companies that make that drug? Novo Nordisk does the one.
They're all a little different. That's why they have separate patents.
I don't think they are different.
They are.
They're the same active ingredient. Maybe the other stuff is a little different.
Yeah, when it comes to medical patents, we're going down the wrong road here, but they all are sort of different. Matter of fact, even on the COVID stuff, the three people that had the different brands that you could go to.
So I think, going back to your Skyrizi example, I think, isn't that a monoclonal antibody? It's the same thing as the...
I'm saying that I know there were two different types of the COVID. The Pfizer and the one guys were the same, and then was it the Johnson & Johnson was different? Anyway, again, this is not above my pay grade, but they're all different enough to be all their own patents. They didn't share. But anyway, what I'm saying is the reason why, one of the reasons, I mean, you guys are never going to guess this, the reason why I'm asking this and so involved in it is because my final with Milton Friedman, that was the final, was something about somebody put out a drug or somebody did this or somebody did that. Trace this all the way through stock and flow analysis, who wins, who loses. And that was the final. And it was a pain in the ass. I mean, to try and work it through the system, who got what, who was harmed, to do this is a
real... Well, last year, that one company challenged Novo Nordisk.
Yeah, and they lost.
But the group, who was it, a patent attorney office or whatever, the people in charge here said, no, we're not touching that.
If you were
Jen, not going to make a ruling on that.
If you were Jen, find something totally new, and you go and get a patent on it, all right, and the patent office does some half-assed investigation, and they grant you a patent. Somebody can challenge you. The patent office doesn't help you at all with the enforcement. It's all on you to defend yourself that it's really your patent. So they're useless in that regard.
Oh, there it is. Mylan Pharmaceuticals, they brought the case to the Office of the Patent Trial and Appeal Board.
Yeah, good
and
luck.
Were denied.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, that's
why... They said it was obviously based on the anti-diabetes medication and should be invalidated. And they were trying to... they were trying to make it.
What do they call the... there's a name for these guys, Jan. What's the name of the company that... Not the name of the company. If say, who are the guys that had the cell phone that nobody uses anymore?
BlackBerry.
Yeah. Well, BlackBerry and IBM, these people have literally thousands of patents. People will go buy them. And every time somebody gets something new, they start making money on, they go through their list of stuff and say, hey, this one's close enough, let's challenge them. What do they call those guys, John? They're like patent vultures or something, but that's not the name. They're companies that just, it's all they do is own patents.
It looks like this company, Mylan, who's owned by a larger Vitreous, the larger public company, wanted to make generic semi-glutitude or generic Wegovy and Ozempic, and they were saying, well, this patent shouldn't be granted because these are obviously diabetes medicines, so you're double dipping. Looks like they were denied. They wanted to make your generic drug that you were talking about.
Yes, but they're not.
$2 instead of
what was the? I'm going to say 20 years ago, John. You might have the memory. What was the drug that was supposed to be almost like a cure for the common cold? And it was Avastin, right? And then it didn't work. And they kept wherever some big company, they got a patent for the thing, and they kept searching for essentially a disease where it would work. And my mom, long story, she had lung cancer, and so they said, well, you can take this Avastin, and it's $2,000 a month. This is 20 years ago, and Medicare doesn't cover it. My mother goes, well, does it work? And the guy goes, well, research has you living 2 weeks longer. My mother goes, and why would I do that at $2,000 a month? The guy goes, well, I'm not saying you should. I'm just saying it's available. Okay, then. Is that thing even on the market? They never could find a disease for it, but they tried every disease, didn't they?
Oh, yeah. Avastin's still there.
Is it useful for anything?
They still got it for cancer.
I don't think it ever worked. Anyway, maybe it did. So, John, I guess the question is, if every time you shift something, somebody wins and somebody loses. And I just wonder, in this monopolistic world of hospitals and, my view is that if all of a sudden they get paid a lot less, I don't think the people on the bottom are making that much anyway. So now the overhead rate would just go down. I'm actually, it's so screwed up, I'm not so sure I could do that final on this subject. I mean, look at University of Chicago, Rush, Northwestern right now. Those things are, I don't know what they are. I mean, where's all the money? It's up top. It's not with the doctors, not with the caregivers, is it?
Right. I mean, it's a very lopsided system, though.
Well, so what happens if their returns on stuff, instead of these exorbitant numbers, instead of, what is it, $10,000 or $11,000 a night on average to stay in one of those places, what if it went back to $2,000, which probably you could justify? What happened? The other rate, who are you firing? I mean, I'm
probably hire more people.
Well, I mean, Carl's of the opinion that it's so screwed up that if we actually fixed it or made it competitive, that the short term, and he's not even talking about short term mess ups in the economy, would be almost something we couldn't come back from. And I just don't believe that. I mean, I know there would be some, we'd fire a few guys, but if the money was going overseas, I'm not saying the Northwestern's money is going overseas, but if the money's going overseas or some other place anyway, why do we even care?
We shouldn't care. I mean, can you imagine, though, the kind of boldness it would take for anybody to push this and to get sponsors for it and to get people in the medical field behind it? Even though to me it's just common sense stuff, this is going to kill this company's economy before it's through. You think everybody could get behind it in some way, but I just don't see it happening.
Well, there was an article that I sent out. This is have to be multiple years ago. It's one of the guys who got a guy who's got to be up there. He married one of Nixon's daughters. One of his daughters was married David Eisenhower, right?
Julie. Tricia married Edward Cox.
That's the guy I'm talking about. The other one, and one married the Eisenhower kid, correct?
Right, David Eisenhower.
The other guy is in some think tank, and they asked him why. When is the sniping going to start? Stop on both sides of the aisle, and them actually do something. And the answer was very articulate. He goes, when we hit bottom, and we haven't hit bottom yet. And it's like, Dr. J's wife was a judge. She's now retired. Terrific lady. She told me one night, I remember a couple of adult beverages, she goes, you know, this thing in divorce court, she was in the divorce court for, maybe a year. She hated it. She ended up in, what's the chancery court? That's the highest one or something. I mean, she's that bright. So anyway, she's telling me, she goes, Tommy, you know, every one of these cases, it's almost like you could write the thing on the wall. She goes, when both sides, doesn't matter if they've got little money or a fortune, they argue and fight until they realize they've pissed away basically 40% of their money on attorneys arguing and fighting. And even though they hate each other, they find a way to talk it out and get it settled. It almost doesn't matter. So the numbers magically somewhere between 40 and 45% that they piss away of their cash before they decide to talk. She goes, there's some. They actually are still talking. They come in with a plan. The attorneys are there for an hour, and off they go with virtually all their money. She goes, that's pretty rare. Which everybody's fighting, and the attorneys, of course, find a way to fight. And anyway, it's almost like, you know, what we're this point was, we're not someplace somewhere. Either one of these people running for president, Trump or Harris, somebody has got to look at the deficit and say, wait a minute, most of the problem is in the medical area, and Carl's not wrong on that. I mean, the government is taking in 40% or 45% of the money they're paying out on Medicare and Medicaid. That's the biggest hole in the budget. And also, on top of that, for those that happen to maybe know somebody who's on Medicare and actually look at their bill, Medicare doesn't pay near as much as other people pay, right? In just about every case. So here's where the problem is. You know, the $10,000, $11,000 a night, the emergency room visits, it's $5,000 for two stitches or something. That's the sucking sound in virtually anybody's opinion. Now, how either Trump or Harris has to look at that and say, here's a problem. There's got to be a few smart people in Congress. I mean, in fact, there's probably more than a few. Someday, somebody somewhere is going to say, we can't sustain this. We can't keep paying $1,000 a pill for something in Sweden they're paying $200 for it at the same company. I mean, how low do we have to go before somebody recognizes this, I guess, is the question.
It should have been setting off alarm bells a long time ago. The complaining has been regular and hysterical about that inequity. With the country that develops these drugs or has the corporations that develop them penalize their own citizens by gouging and giving it away everywhere else. And this creates a black market that, again, doesn't benefit the consumer by any means, but it just allows people to take advantage of this inequity and to redistribute the crazy disjunct between what the drug really costs and what people are willing to pay. And you have the insurance companies then that are, hook, line, and sinker behind it. So, well, I think it's the insurance business is where the problem really has landed.
Well, they're not going to fight it. They'll just charge more, charge the people more.
Right, right. But if they were to take the lead on it and say, we're losing money, we can't afford to do this. We're only going to be paying this for treatment so and so, or procedure so and so, and it's just the way it's going to be. You would see the hospitals and the doctors back off.
I think the doctors are totally out of decision loop. I don't think they're anywhere near it.
They have zero to say about any of this.
Which is pretty scary.
Employees, somebody else. So.
Yeah, I don't know if you'd want your kid to be a doctor now, coming out of there with the debt.
The crushing disappointment, Tom, for somebody who dreamed of being a doctor, and you see what really you're worth to a corporation, and you're there just to follow orders, and this is exactly what people liked about being a doctor. You could be your own boss, even if you were in a group of some kind. You were given a lot of freedom to decide what kind of treatment you liked. If somebody didn't like that, they could go to another doctor, find somebody who was willing to work with them in a different direction. Well, now you're not going to find any variation among doctors at all. So,
we have a Ricardo. Is Mike in the room?
He was not too long ago, but I don't see him in the meeting right now. I can try to get him back in.
Yeah, so what's trying to get him? He says, how can we invite him to the meeting and then we muted him? I don't think we ever... I would love to have him in. Anyway, we'll see if we can, see if we can get him back.
I got him right now.
All right. The... yeah, I mean, but, you know, the weird part, John, I guess, is this is one of the... We had this discussion. It wasn't with you. Somebody was all over term limits, saying how if term limits would be the solution for all this. And I'm not... I've always taken the other side of that argument. One, just for good radio, I guess. You know, you're not supposed to agree all the time. You're supposed to get information out of the other people. But I really don't think it's a solution, because if somehow the people who want term limits, and I think you're probably one of this group, if the execution of the plan, I think, to me, makes it sort of useless. I mean, you know, should after 40 years somebody be out of there? 30 years? You know, I'm not going to argue with you on that. You know, give somebody else a chance. But if all of a sudden we decided there's a massive crush for term limits and say, okay, well, the people in there are probably going to be grandfathered in, all right? And the so everybody's term limits is 10 years. We can't sit on our ass for 10 years and see if it worked. That's kind of too long of a time to see if... And as they used to say on the trading floor, Greg, they would say, what's the workaround, right? The workaround is when people were talking about term limits in Congress somewhat seriously a few years ago, I was reading this article about how Pfizer and some of these places are now contributing, use the right term, at the state level. They're just going to start lower. They're just going to start, you know, instead of just paying the top senators, they're going to pay everybody. They're going to pay on the lower level. But it's not like there isn't a workaround on the part of the people there. The idea is you want people there long enough where they get bought off, right? They just buy off lower. They got so much money, they can go after everybody. I mean, I don't know how you stop it. And how do you have a Congress? You think there's anybody in Congress that hasn't gotten a check from a drug company?
Oh, God, no.
I mean, there's probably somebody. who do you think that guy would be?
They must
think
he's unimportant.
Somebody pretty unimportant.
I'm not for term limits. I am for age limits. And that would, you know, get rid of the mess we have now with these octogenarians pulling the strings long after they should have, you know, put out the pasture.
We have Mr. Mr. Murphy. Mike, hey, how are you, bud?
Good morning, fellas. John, I agree with you about getting rid of the octogenarians. That would be a wonderful thing. In the Army or in the Armed Forces, actually, you have to retire by the age about 65, and that's probably when Congress ought to retire.
Yep.
Wait a minute. You're getting kind of close to home.
Well, I retired a while back, Tom. You just refused to, so... Well, you just like to sit around all day and tell old stories.
Ah, well, actually, when it comes to some of the stuff in my industry, I mean, as long as you're okay, you know more than you ever did when you were 50. When it comes to trading and stuff, I'll bet you know more than you did when you were 50. The question is, do you want to be out on a battlefield? You know, probably not. But it doesn't.
No, don't think so, Tom.
But it doesn't mean you're useless.
Oh, that's very true.
Anyway, I think somewhere along the line, I think these are they're kind of fixes that we just sort of... If you were running a firm that wanted to influence Congress, you wouldn't let retiring people over 80 get in your way at all, I don't think. You'd find a way where that doesn't matter. There's going to be a new guy, just pay him. In other words, it might be a solution for something, but it's not... It's not a solution for the drug company's influence over Congress, I don't think.
Well, Congress just, from what I have seen recently, it's all about maintaining power. You know, it's unfortunate, but that's certainly, that's what was really behind Pelosi's move to shift Biden out of the race. She knew he was going to lose. So, and then when he loses, they lose power.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it's... Well, but if you actually think that you're the solution And you probably start out thinking you're doing a good job, and you think you're doing a better job than the guy you're running against, right?
You may be right, but I think the handwriting was on the wall for him once he started looking at the polls. But who knows?
Well, I think the people around him were starting to realize. I mean, his age is a bad thing.
Well, it's unfortunate, but the people around him lied to the American people for about 3.5 years.
Well, I'm of the opinion it came pretty crushingly bad in the last several months.
I would agree with you, and to me, and I'm not a doctor, but it almost looks as if he had a stroke and somehow it was hidden.
Something, I mean, again, I don't know the man, but I think some degradation occurred between the State of the Union and the debate. I thought he wasn't so bad at State of the Union. He wasn't perfect. He never was perfect.
No, but that's true. But when he did the NATO conference, he handled that pretty well. So I'm just not sure. I think he has good days and bad days, but who knows?
Yeah, I mean, and he's not running, so now I would have liked to have seen it. I don't know if it would have had a different outcome, but Mike Quigley, he's a representative from my district. He wanted it to happen 8 weeks ago, so there could be some sort of a re-primary, maybe even a national primary for other people to put their name in the hat, and not just be tossed off the
Harris. No, I agree with him, Tom.
So do I.
That should have happened. I mean, it's really unfortunate.
Now, whether somebody could have challenged her and won in a 6-week period, I don't know about that. I mean, it's not like there's anybody hanging there right at the edge. There's not anybody that has their name, and maybe carefully, they've never put anybody else's name out there, right? I mean, it's...
Well, I mean, Manchin considered it briefly. He probably saw that it was going to cost him too much money, whatever. Who knows? Or maybe, perhaps, no one, ponied up any money for him. And that's really what hurt Biden also.
Well, everybody talks about this. I mean, I have a lot of... You guys are relatively conservative. Boy, I know some people that are, out on the end of the plank. But they're bitching and moaning about all the money that is given to her. And I go, guys, if you're gonna have these arguments, you should have some idea of the amount of money you're talking about. You give a president $100 million. How many corporations would you guys say are willing to finance the entire campaign? 100 of them? 50 of them for sure. Because one contract coming out of Washington is worth more than you could ever give a guy.
Right. Well, I mean, just what you were talking about, Medicare. It's... I think Medicare is up to roughly 20% of the budget now.
I'll get you the exact number. But you know what, though, Mike? It's... Medicare pays doctors and hospitals less than anybody else. What about everybody else?
No, I know. I look at the Medicare bills, what you were saying. I look at the actual costs that people get in Medicare, and it's, they charge you $2,000 on paper, and it seems like they might get $200 if they're lucky. So
yeah, it's like 20% at most.
The actual costs of hospitalization are very exorbitant. That's all.
Well, they're kind of like the list price.
The paper costs, exactly. Yeah.
While I'm looking this up, I got a question of you two gentlemen, and Greg is still here. How sneaky do you think they are? There was a guy in my building, good friend, had a hernia surgery. I don't know if I told John, you probably know this. And he's got one of these things with the $5,000 deductible. I think he's one of the Blue Cross plans, but they got so many different plans now. I think it was $5,000 deductible, and he had to pay 10% or something, 15% of the hospital bill. And so it was going to cost him like $9,000 or $10,000 for the hernia. Now, it was a simple hernia, which there's no simple hernia if it's on you, but it wasn't like some double, triple thing or anything like that. It was a simple hernia. Well, there's places that will do a simple hernia for, I'm going to say, $2,500, maybe $3,000. And he says to me, what should I do? and I'm supposed to be this, you know, finance genius. I don't know about a genius, but supposed to know some of this stuff. You know what, guys? I could not. These people have priced this so perfectly that I couldn't make the call, because he's got a kid who plays soccer. You know, any given day he could, you know, break an ankle or something. It was so early in the year, it was February, that I'm not so sure it was better, because if he paid the deductible once, then he was okay for the rest of the year. But they
and to pay it early in the year seems to be a good thing.
Yeah. So I'm sitting there going, these guys have this priced so perfectly that I can't make the call. I said, I'm almost thinking it's better for you to pay to 9 or 10. And that's what he ended up doing. And I'm thinking, but now my question to you guys is, the 15% of the bill that they send him, say the bill's, well, they sent him, it was supposed to be like $1,500, so we'll do the math. What are they saying, that the bill was actually $20,000 in the hospital or something? Something along those lines? I wonder.
Oh, I don't know, Tom. To me, he would have to pay, you know, essentially the full list price until he met his deductible.
Well, no, the deductible's first, and then he had to pay like 15 or 20% of the remainder.
Oh, okay.
So I'm wondering if they give him, if he's paying the list, the insurance company's not, if they could be that sneaky or that crooked. I bet they are.
Oh, sure. Sure, Tom.
That really sucks. If that's happening. Well, here, Mike, you're paying 20% of this number. By the way, we're paying 80% of this other number. We were taught better than that. I don't think we would do that to anybody. Anyway, Mike, your actual number here is Medicare, Medicaid is $1.7 trillion. Social Security is $1.4 trillion. Defense is $915 billion. Interest, by the way, 2 weeks ago I did this. Interest on national debt was below defense. Now it's actually $1 billion more. It's 916. That's how fast it's creeping.
Right. Well, people have been saying this for years, Tom. Simpson Bowles. You know, we can't get to where our debt is more than defense budget and Medicare and Medicaid. You know, that's ridiculous.
Well, Medicaid's still the biggest dog in this whole thing. It's double interest and it's double defense.
Okay. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Now, Social Security.
Krauthammer called that, actually. He did not like the fact, Obamacare. He seemed to think we should somehow, I forget how he wanted to address it, but he definitely wanted to address the medical costs.
Well, the Obamacare ended up not addressing any of the costs, just was who was paying.
Right.
It was like the shell game on the sidewalk.
Right. Well,
I mean, but it just shifted the cost part around. The only defense I can give Obama on that, and it's not a very good one, is Hillary tried to do something, and I forget, God, it was so long ago, what her plan actually was. I suspect that it was better than Obamacare. And nobody liked her, and Bill was going through his shtick at the time. So they just basically laughed her off, right? So they basically laughed the whole thing out of there. When it was pretty obvious, I think, to anybody who'd ever either known people in that industry or had a problem and had to go to the doctor, that the old system was not going to last much longer. I mean, the old system was totally wrecked. And Bush comes in, and maybe with his excuse being 9/11, he totally ignored the problem for 8 years. Well, that wasn't a solution either. I mean,
that's true. That's very true.
Way back, you know, the hospitals actually used to price stuff. I'm going to say when was Clinton in the 90s? Actually, Audrey had one of her best friends. Her husband was the director of like a third in charge of the biggest hospital in the state outside of Chicago. I won't name the hospital. You know, the guy's long retired. And I said, how does this all work? He goes, you wouldn't believe it. He goes, we get like 20% of the people that have these, you know, these, well, they became called Cadillac policies, but they were the high-end policies.
Right, the old union-type policies.
Yeah, he said, those people come in here, they have a baby. Those are the people that we can give them a $400 package of like 8 diapers and 3 bottles and send them out the front door, and they just pay it. Whatever it is, they just pay. He goes, then there's a whole another group of like 40, 50% of these insurance companies that are starting to negotiate some of this stuff. And they don't pay the same numbers, even though the top guys still do. And then there's, what do you say, then there's like 30% that are on Medicare, and they pay way less. Then there's the Medicaid group, which gives you 100 hours a day, whether you did brain surgery on the guy or he's just sitting in a room doing, you know, with a disease or something. Then there's the bottom 10 or 20%, I'm getting over 100 here, but that they don't pay anything. They show up at the door and you can't turn them away. So essentially the top two tiers, especially the top tier, are insuring everybody else in the place. And I'm sitting there going, well, that dog's not going to hunt for very long because they're going to stop doing that. I mean, so the idea was if you and I went to the hospital, or any of the four of us, we were being overcharged. We were essentially insuring the people that couldn't pay.
No, I gotcha.
But the rest of society kind of wasn't. So the theory was, all right, wait a minute. If we could find a way to get for everybody to have insurance for the top people should actually come down. You're still going to have the bottom 10 or 15, the people 10 or 15 that have no insurance, we're still going to find a way to pay them, be Medicaid or whatever. But then everybody else will sort of be on even ground. So this crazy system we have now, which is falling apart anyway, we'll take it apart in an intelligent manner. So then you get to Obama, and I think what happened there is they had a pretty good idea about the payment side, but they didn't. They totally ignored the cost side, which was growing like a weed every day. And they essentially had people in the industry writing the bills. So at the end of the day, the numbers are so large, nobody can afford to pay them. But the structure of the payments, I don't think was all that bad. The idea that if everybody had insurance, that we'd all be better off or whatever. I mean, the cost for everybody would be down. I think the theory of it was okay. The application was pretty awful. That's one man's opinion.
No, I would agree with you, Tom. I don't think, by giving everybody high deductibles, that just kind of skews the entire system.
Well, another kind of a, we had a, my brother, you know, pretty bright guy, you know him. When we were doing, we had more people here at PTI when we were doing a lot of futures business and stuff. We were the absolute worst, we were the, you know, the ass that went over the fence last, because we had like three young ladies that were childbearing age, and the rest of the guys were older. So if you could put two groups that you didn't want, that's what we were, right? So he puts together this, remember those health savings plans?
Right, the age, well.
You had a real high deductible, but you could take that off your income.
Your tax.
Yeah. So you could actually take five, your deductible was $5,000 a year, okay? So you could take $5,000 out and put it there, and it became almost like another IRA. So after like 3 years, I'd never been to the doctor. I got $15,000 in there. I'm going, this is great. This is going to be like another IRA. Well, the next year, I had like two or three things. They weren't all that serious. One was a knee, and I don't know what the other one was. Well, if you went to your doctor and said, hey, my doctor's name was Lee. I go, Lee, I've, you know, got this knee problem or whatever. He goes, all right, go see this guy. Get an MRI. So, of course, like a dummy, I do it at Northwestern. The number comes out to be like $49.99. So, and then, anyway, my $15,000 was gone in 1 year, and insurance never paid a dime. They knew exactly the number.
Well,
the specialist MRI was five.
Have a savings account?
No, it's gone.
Well, they did away with that.
I don't know if you. Our group, we ended up paying more, and we got. But I mean, they know the numbers better than we do. The specialist / MRI was exactly the deductible.
Well, and that's whether that's the healthcare people or whether that's the actuary people. Who knows? But I mean, you're right. They do know the numbers, and everything's geared toward getting the max amount.
But I never had surgery or anything like that. But I had three minor, like, let's see what's wrong with this guy issue, which turned out to be, thank God, nothing. And there was my $15,000 gone. they never paid a dime. I mean, these guys are genius. I was almost toasting them in the bar. Just saying. I mean, I tell you what, Mike, if you were the insurance guy, you'd say yes. Right?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's
mission,
what...
Mission accomplished, too.
Yeah, mission accomplished. You know, these guys are not dumb. A buddy had said he worked for an insurance company. He goes, we're very good at charging people, we're actually pretty good at investing and we're real bad on paying.
Right, that's exactly what, you know, they stall on the payments. That's
well, and the what happens when I was actually, Mike, I'm glad you piled in this morning. I was listening to the radio last night coming home from my bros, and they were saying that the Secretary of Defense just ordered, I don't know if they were already there or heading over there or whatever, but he told the aircraft carrier, you know, Abraham Lincoln's group, I don't know if you heard this or not, to basically kick it in the ass and get over there faster or earlier or something or other. And I was going to ask you if you heard that. How? That must cost something. Is that, now does Congress this week have to another bill for the extra dough, or?
No, Congress is off until September, Tom. So, you know, that they're not doing anything.
But I guess where does the dough come from?
Executive orders.
I know, but where does the money come from? There's got to be some.
Oh, the money comes out of defense. It comes out of contingency funds in defense.
Okay, and it.
There's always a big slush fund in defense, and it's called contingency funds, and that's used for any active operation. So that, you know, when I deployed to Somalia, they used contingency funds to deploy us. When I would go on temporary duty to Kosovo, for instance, we would use contingency funds to pay for that.
Well, but you're already getting paid. I mean, or did you get a bonus?
Yes, I was getting paid, but I was just getting my normal pay. They have to, you know, the Air Force wants you to pay for your transportation on an Air Force plane, or we would travel via civil air, you know, down to Pristina, which is where I went to that one time.
What the hell kind of plane did you fly down there? Was it an airline to go there?
It was just an airline. I probably Swiss Air or something. I flew into Ljubljana in Slovenia, and then from there we went to Pristina. We probably took some local airline to Pristina.
Where's Pristina? Out of curiosity.
Pristina is the capital of Kosovo.
Ah.
It was when I was assigned to U.S. Army Europe. So, and you know, and we did a lot of support to the Balkans. Actually, I went down there for a conference. Myself and a warrant officer went down there to speak at a conference.
I got a real stupid question. When you fly like commercial like that, are you wearing your uniform or no?
No, you didn't have to wear your uniform then.
Well, did they tell you not to, or you didn't have to?
You could do. You probably had the freedom to do both. But for the most part, I didn't like traveling in uniform. So,
we don't want them to blow up the plane because you're in it.
Well, you know, it's funny, but soldiers coming out of basic training, like now at, I don't even know what the forts are called anymore, but formerly Fort Bragg, now Fort Liberty. You know, they generally do travel in uniform because they're in huge groups, and that way the people can keep better control over them.
Was Bragg a bad guy? Is that why we got rid of his name?
He was a Confederate. That's why we got rid of him. Yes. Probably Lee. They're probably going to get rid of anything to do with General Lee, or, you know, Robert E. Lee. Who else would? Oh, Fort Hood. That was another Confederate general. That's now Fort Cavazos.
Hood was a Confederate guy too, right?
Yeah, right. Sam Hood. Actually.
Well, but half the country was Confederates. Are we going to kick them all in the ocean, or what are we going to do?
Well, that's what they did. They've renamed all the forts. Like, I don't know about Fort Benning. That's probably changed too. But a lot of the places where I have been, they changed their names.
How come there's no Fort Murphy?
Well, actually, in the Gulf area, there's a USS Michael Murphy, Tom. Not named after me, though. Named after a Navy SEAL Medal of Honor winner.
Really?
Yep.
Is that a destroyer or something?
I'm not sure whether it's a destroyer or some sort of a command ship. I don't know what it is, Tom. I don't. I should figure it out. But.
Oh, hey, we got a... We're kind of running out of time here, but I have a quick question. I want to talk to you again about this. somehow, I'd heard that Switzerland and Sweden, it's a whole topic we could discuss someday. Because Jan will want to talk about this too. The whole topic, I've been going back and forth with Lou about when we talk about people tracking with drones and all these kinds of things. Are we set up for the tank fight and people are sneaking by and stabbing us if we're not set up the right way? And there was an article that had to do with Sweden. And Sweden's how they actually are very capable of defending themselves.
Sweden's very good. And they are in NATO now, too.
Well, but they were talking about the question had to do with these Swedish planes. There's no way they could go up against an F-15 or an F-16. And the guy goes, that's not what they're there for. Evidently, Sweden, all around the country, has like stretches of highway that are designated landing strips. If ever anybody tries to invade them, these planes they have can land right there. They have, they can gas them up. They have, bullets
and
whatever.
Yeah, they have petrol or whatever.
And they can take right back off. They're all over the place. And they said if somebody tries to invade, these guys are going to be in the air kicking your ass on the ground. And that's what they do. They're not designed for a 30,000 foot dogfight with an F-18. So I wonder. Be interesting when is a lot of our wars now. Some are against, like, shall we say, lower tech places. If we got the wrong stuff.
Well, that's why we've been so successful, and I'm sure that's why Lou emphasizes it. We have had air superiority in every war that we ever come into or that we enter. So, air superiority is what the Air Force gives that to us. And I think with Iran or with China, we may not be able to have air superiority right away. So that will make a big difference in the way we would fight a war.
All right, well, let's keep that for another day. We also want to get your report on the Olympics. The girls' game was wild, but I don't know anything about the soccer. We got to find out what happened there from you because you're our expert. Maybe when Kevin's on later in a week, we can do our Olympic stuff because I'm going to keep John on to talk to Nancy. We got to through some
I have
of
to
the
ring off today, Tom, so I'll tell listen
all right.
later.
Okay, all right, bud. Why don't we go to break? Thank you, Mike. Thanks, John. And when Nancy comes on, we'll talk about some of the real estate stuff because some of these mortgage rates are going down, see if it's actually helping anybody. SP Futures now up 16, NASDAQ is up 67. Be right back.
Interested in promoting your business to a high-end audience comprised of entrepreneurs, traders, executives, and the everyday business person? Consider advertising on Stocks and Jocks. With a devout listenership covering the Chicago market, along with a vast online presence, advertising on Stocks and Jocks may be just what it takes to put your business over the top. For more information, contact me, Matt Weber, at matt@stocksandjocks.net. That's matt@stocksandjocks.net.
Stocks, Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
Stocks and Jocks.
You are out of control.
Here, right now. Right here, right now.
Hello and welcome back to Stacks and Jacks. I'm Tom Allen. Ricardo on the board. SP Futures up 16. NASDAQ is up 62. We're keeping the rally going here from the big down moves later a week ago, Friday, Thursday, and a week ago, Monday. So we've made a lot of that back, and we'll see if we continue to do that. Dow Futures up 77. Europe, real quick, DAX up 31.2%. Up, but not much. FTSE up 29.3%. CAC round is actually down 7. Call that flat. Asia, we've got the Nikkei up 193.5%. Hang Seng down up 21, call that flat. Shanghai down 4, call that flat. So far, kind of a snorer today. U.S. on Friday, we were up, but we were slow. Dow was up 51, S&P up 24, NASDAQ up 85. So I guess we'll call that an inside day. Bonds, 10-year unchanged, 3.94. The blend up 1 basis point, 2.23. Not much going on there. Oil, up a little bit, up 85 cents, 1%, 77.69. So trying to creep back from the big down move. Brent up 69 cents, 80.35. Natural gas up 7, 222. Pretty strongly over $2. We're kind of ducked under. We've got gold rallying again up 960, 24.83. Now, again, this is the December contract. The August contract, which comes off pretty soon here, is 24.39. So there's like a $50 difference. We'll go through that the next time Greg's on. We've got FX, not much going on here either, foreign exchange. Euro's pretty much unchanged. The pound's pretty much unchanged. The yen, however, is down a little bit, up to 147.59 against the dollar. And we got Bitcoin up down 54 bucks, 59,701. So very quiet there after kind of a crazy week. They were over 60, traded under 50. Now they're back to 59,700. So up, down, up, down. Carlo, real quick, what do you got for us? Traffic, weather, sports.
Morning, Chief. It's currently 7:36 a.m. here in Chicago. 63 degrees right now with a high of 79. Partly sunny, and tonight will be mostly cloudy with a low of 66. Phoenix, Arizona, 88 degrees right now with a high of 106. Mostly cloudy and very warm. Tonight, mostly cloudy as well with a low of 86 degrees. Traffic in Chicago, inbound Kennedy from Monroe's 25 minutes. Inbound Edens from Lane Cook, 41 minutes. Inbound Eisenhower from Wolf, 31 minutes. Inbound Dan Ryan from 95th, 18 minutes. And Stevenson from 294 to the Dan Ryan, 29 minutes. Lastly, sports. Yesterday, the Diamondbacks beat the Phillies 12-5, and today we got a couple of games in the MLB as well. Cubs play the Guardians at 5:40 p.m. White Sox play Yankees at 7:10 p.m. and the Diamondbacks play the Rockies at 8:40 p.m. Lastly, the 2024 Summer Olympics are ended now in Paris, and apparently U.S. was leading with 126 medals, China second place with 91, and Great Britain in third place with 65. That's all I got for you, Chief.
I think you got to go through this whole list and find a sport that we can do.
Yeah. You know what? Actually, I think I'd be pretty good at water polo.
You ever played it? It's a tough game.
You think?
I do you know how to swim?
I do.
All right. Well,
I love how to I love swimming and stuff.
Well, that's a start. I think curling might be us.
Right. Maybe so.
Maybe so. I'm not going to do the climbing wall. Did you see those guys?
Oh, yeah, oh, definitely, God. Man. Yeah, they're impressive.
Oh, God, do you have Nancy?
Yes, we do.
Yep.
Nancy's got to be all happy because on the morning, I heard on the way in, mortgage rates are down. There's a line outside your door ringing your doorbell. You and Audrey, you're so busy, you don't know what to do because everybody's saved by the Fed.
Well, not necessarily, Tom. Everybody's happy when they were 3-4.
Ah.
2-4. So it's not that time yet. But the Bears won, so that's... They actually look like they know how to play football. First time they might know some rules how to go forward and not give the ball to the other team. It's amazing.
Your friend, I won't identify her, was absolutely gushing on TV about the Bears. By the way, do you have your reservation in New Orleans for a Super Bowl?
Oh, God, no. Sorry.
This lady was going crazy on the Bears and how she has the Bears in the Super Bowl. She has... What's his name? Williams in the Hall of Fame. They had some guy from the score on there. Audrey says, what do these two people know about football? It was an exhibition game. Duh.
Right. That's all it was, guys. But it was good to see them, that they actually kind of knew how to play and move the ball forward. And we didn't have to go three and out. It's a miracle.
It's a miracle, yeah. We'll see kind of what happened. Does the season start early this year? There's only one more exhibition game, right? It's only the 12th.
No, there's two more.
I thought
they only play. This is their. They play three, and if you get the Hall of Fame game, that's just an extra.
So they're down to three. I thought they were down to two. Okay, all right.
There's three. They played one, so now we're down to two. So.
So when are you making your reservations for New Orleans?
I'm not. I mean, I'm.
You expect to be a guest of Stocks and Jacks?
Pardon me?
You expect to be a guest in Stocks and Jacks, the Skybox down there?
Well, if you guys are going, that's great. Then I could do that if I'm a guest.
Yeah, well, sure.
Yeah. Well, when are you buying the box now?
Well, we got to get a sponsor or two first, I think.
Are we going to see in heaven when that happens?
We might be somewhere. So what does the difference? I mean, obviously, any move down is a good move for people who have mortgages, but... We tapped it close to 8. Now we're 6.5. Is that? I mean, obviously, if you're buying a place, you're way better off at 6.5 than you're at 8. But is it? It's not enough to jigger the refi or anything like that, is it?
No. Oh, God, no. No. Not at all. People are getting home equity lines of credit, and that they believe is not really a mortgage. So. They're using that to get rid of their credit card debt. It's complicated because the first thing you do is you have your mortgage and then you get a home equity line of credit. And then when that's maxed out, then the rates go down enough where you can combine the two into one mortgage. And then they're saying that they have a mortgage again. But until then, they don't realize the home equity line of credit is a mortgage, and they still owe it against their house. And it, a lot of them are balloons, so they're going to have to renew them. And they don't have to be renewed if at that time they feel you can't afford it. You have to qualify for that. Some banks have a 30-year home equity line of credit that you can actually use for the first 10 years, and then it turns into an automatic fixed payment in 20 years. There's no just paying interest anymore.
But it's definitely a lien on, it's a lien on the house, right?
Yeah, it's a lien on the house is a mortgage, whether people realize it or not. So when I ask them, do you have a mortgage, they say, you know, no. And then you find out they really do have a, you know, fully executed line of credit, which is mortgage, and that's their equity being used in a, just in a different form. So it's strange, but people do not realize that a second lien is a mortgage, whether you like it or not. It's a lien against your house. First lien, second lien.
Well, if you don't pay the plumber and he puts a lien on the house, that's kind of a mortgage too, right?
Yes, it is, but it's easier to obviously get off because that bill would never be as big as the first two could be.
Is that somebody else piling in, Ricardo, or what is that? There's somebody in the background.
No, I don't hear anything.
Maybe because I've got two earphones on? I don't know.
When you get somebody, for those that ought to know, because she's been on for enough times, Nancy is in the mortgage business. She's very good at what she does. She's very inventive, and she likes people. So I would say if anybody is looking to buy a house or a mortgage, you should probably give her a buzz. But when you go through this stuff, I mean more than Audrey, because you're actually getting a loan for people. I mean, if people say they're a cash buyer, she proceeds as if they are. And if they were looking for a mortgage, she likes to see if they're qualified, and she'll send them to you, and hopefully they'll be qualified. But you're the one who actually digs through, you know, all the dirty laundry from everybody, dirty or clean, whatever it happens to be. When you buy the house, I mean, obviously there's the mortgage, there's the taxes, there's insurance, and oh, by the way, there's some sort of planned or intended, not intended, but inevitable maintenance. That's why a lot of people like to buy new, because allegedly there won't be any maintenance, but I don't know about that. How has the cost structure of the world in the last 4 or 5 years impacting your going through people's finances with them? I mean, I know you know, because we've talked, that a furnace is now $5,000 and not $3,000. And a roof is, you know, whatever, $60,000 and not $10,000 or $20,000. I'm not saying a lot in the last few years. If a house is 50 years old, what kind of a maintenance rider do you put on this when people are seemingly putting every bit less nickel toward the mortgage? I mean, it's something you have to address. How do you do that?
Well, I just tell people up front that most people hire a home inspector, and he comes back with a list of what he sees that is wrong. And then that can be negotiated with the seller. And then the second thing that happens is that when the appraiser goes out, they are now putting in their appraisal, this must be fixed. And that has to be addressed before closing. But let's say the furnace is 20 years old, but there's nothing wrong with it. Well, that doesn't qualify as a problem because there's nothing wrong with that, right? So if there's a lot of these, like some, I just had one where the man said to me, I believe the house I'm buying will need a new roof. And I said, okay, they wanted to put all their money down on the mortgage. And I said, please do not do that, because where are you going to get the money to buy a roof? And he said, well, I guess we could save for it. And I said, really? Because the average roof now is about $15,000. And they were like in shock. And I said, that's what it costs. So you have to realize that you have to pay this off. Would you rather pay it off with your, 6.5% mortgage, and that is what they got? I said, would you rather pay it off with 6.5% or on your credit cards with 22%, 24%? Or would you rather, just pay cash for it and just know that that was just part of the price cost of your house? unfortunately, you can't put it over time. So they are actually going to go less. A lot of people won't do that. They'll just take what you say and then they'll do what you asked. I actually bring up these kinds of things when I do a mortgage so that people are not in shock when they get in there and then they try and do the next step. How many people would realize that there is no financing for a roof? Right? It's a huge expense.
What do you mean? That's what credit cards are for. Ugh.
Yeah, well, and it's not, though. Not at the kind of expense like in another loan I had, the man took out a needed $1,000, and he actually took out borrowed $1,000, will have to pay back $3,000. He took out a 36% loan to get the $1,000.
Did he get that from the mob, or the bank?
No, he got it. I don't know where he got it from, some payday thing. And we had, in order to finish the closing, because obviously this was glaring, you pull your credit the day before you close or the day of you close, it was glaring. We had to delay the closing, and we had to pay that off at closing. So he borrowed $1,000, and we had to pay back the company $3,000. Because it was one of these loans where you had to pay the interest first before you collect the principal.
That's unbelievable. So it was a three-year loan, or how many year loan was it? If it was the interest was too.
It was a 3 year loan. It was, but he didn't realize he was going to really have to pay back $3,000. He was planning on just paying the amount back right after he closed. But it was an emergency that came up, said he had to have it. And I'm like, oh my God. So that's when you say, when you get inventive, that's what I can do. Most people that they closing would just be done.
Why aren't we in the loan business if that's what they're getting? Up. Why aren't we in the loan business?
You know, people don't always understand what they're getting or what they're signing. So, and that's where I come in. I'm like, well, no, this is really what this piece of paper says, what the guy said, but the person who's telling you this has no, he thinks he understands the situation, but he really doesn't. This is what you sign. And that's the unfortunate part of my job, because I'm always delivering out, you know, good news or bad news. Unfortunate news. This is what you signed. The person said it, but they really didn't understand what they were saying. They might have believed it because someone else told them that, but they really didn't understand.
What are you doing about what are you doing about the taxes? We get a little bounce back, Ricardo, on something, or some windows open.
No, there's not, Tom. There's really, really not. Let me try.
It's not from you. It's something on our board. What are you doing about the taxes? Had a jolt for the Southwest side area. Some areas worse than others.
Yes, that's true.
Well, now two things. One is you didn't quote, I guess, plan for it. Most people didn't. But now, are you reasonably secure that it's not going to get any worse for like the next 5 years, or do you think it's going to happen 2 years in a row? How do you judge that?
No, I can't. Because the taxes work in Cook, where you get assessed, and then during that assessment period, you can definitely protest your taxes or whatever. And then they can't reassess you for 3 more years. So these people are fixed for 3 years. And a lot of people are struggling because their taxes, I mean, really went up. People just don't have, let's say you just went up $2,000. Well, that's just so, you know, that's over $1,800, would be $150 more a month. I mean, what do you do with that?
Well, you're also
how do you absorb that in your budget when you're already, I mean, all of us have a budget, right? We know it's never really going to work, but you'd like to stay close to it, right? But I think what's blown everyone's budget recently is the food. You know, food is just so, if there's nothing you can touch in the grocery store, that's not $5. Well, maybe an apple or a banana, one.
Yeah, one.
But it's not, it's getting, you know, that's where the people are really, really, I think, hurting the most. And then you add on, oh, well, here's another 150 for this. And the big secret is that people are losing jobs.
Well, when you talked earlier about people who, it's me that's getting the bounce back. I don't know if it's coming up on anybody else, Ricardo, but I'm getting a bounce back.
Yeah, I hear it too. I'm not really sure what's going on. I'm trying to work on it right now, though.
All right, fair enough. But we're still okay. When you talked about the people where you're going to need a roof in 5 years and that, so you put less down, how many actually will go, boy, talk about an old term, How many will take the extra 10 grand and plunk it in their credit union and say, well, we're just going to leave it there and not touch it until the roof comes due? Or just say, don't. I mean, I guess the risk is then you go spend that.
Well, the risk. Well, these people are going to leave. I think we figured, we went over everything in the house that they have seen that needs to be repaired. And they figure it's going to be somewhere around $40,000 or $50,000. They're going to leave that to the side to make sure that they can make the repairs.
Okay, well, that makes sense then. I mean, if you do that. I mean,
yeah, it does, because you don't want to, I mean, like it or not, if you know those repairs are coming, I said, why don't you, you know, their plan is to buy the house, get everything repaired off of this $40,000 or $50,000, because that way they can get quotes on everything and decide what they want to do versus what they have to do.
You just got to make sure you don't say, I need my midlife crisis two-seater car and never went to $40,000.
Well, I mean, you know, that always can happen, but you have to monitor who you're dealing with.
Yep.
And from what I can tell, I don't really think that's going to be the issue, but that would be my, you know, that's why everyone is individual and they have to sit down and see everything, all the laundry, so that I can help them figure out what to do.
The economy, I mean, you see the market last week. Whatever bullish, bearish, whatever you happen to be, the amount of moves up and down, well, to me being here forever, is somewhat troubling because it seems like something is amiss. I mean, 2 and 3% moves per day is, I'm going to say, I won't say not normal, but it's sure as hell not usual. We went a few years at one point without a 1% move in a day, and now that's like chump change. The variables, what do you, and now we've seen people getting laid off in some areas. We've seen a lot of people, I mean, we were talking to my brothers yesterday about, you know, the hourly wages for the last 2 years have gone up fairly steadily, and yet the weekly paycheck, maybe because there's people down less hours, is not going up. You're seeing Nancy, you're probably closer to this than anybody. By the establishment survey, you see 2.5 to 3 million jobs created last year. You see the household survey, we're up 50 grand. So do we just create 2.5 million second jobs where people are now working two jobs? If you believe both numbers, that would be the only cross that would make them both worthwhile. What are we reaching the edge of the turnip here? It used to be one breadwinner could cover the place, then it was two. Now what are we up to, 2.5 or 2.75? Everybody's got, both husband and wife have two jobs. Where are we at with this stuff? You're closer to this than me.
I believe that it's definitely it's a hard two, and it's a soft 2.5.
Really?
So yeah, it is.
Explain that to everybody. Explain that to everybody.
Okay. So the mom and the dad, husband and the wife, are definitely working full-time jobs. And then if kids are involved, and usually I'm talking two to three kids, there's a soft half going where either one of the two parents are working an extra job to pay for usually babysitting or sports for these kids. You know, these private, like, there's a, what do they call them, road baseball teams? Or
Travel teams.
Travel teams. That's what they're playing for, travel teams. They're working so they can pay for these kids to be on travel teams, hoping that they get some kind of scholarship either to high school or college. I'm not saying it's going to work. I'm just saying I'm sitting back and waiting to see what will happen. But these travel teams and the parents doing the soft extra work, I have seen that it brings the kids are so busy, there's no time for drugs or anything like that. So I can't say that it's a bad thing. And by soft half, I mean like the dad could be doing carpentry work on the side, that kind of thing. Like put, you know, help somebody remodel a bathroom. They're doing, mom could be a psychologist doing work on weekends with kids. There's some kind of, you know, nurse where they're picking up a shift here or there. I've seen all of this going on. And the reason it comes out is because I ask if there's any extra income, and they say yes, but it's not consistent, and it's, you know, it's just income. It's, they certainly haven't been at it for a steady stream for 2 years. It's just something they've picked up as side jobs to help pay for these extracurricular activities for kids.
I have a question. You've been around a while. I'm not saying you're older or anything, but you know people pretty
I
well.
I am all time. It's okay. You can just say it.
Okay. well, the I don't want to go back to my day, but I played sports.
Okay, back to your day. I remember your daytime. I'm not as ancient as you are, so.
Well, I mean, I played sports every single day, but I didn't. My mom never drove me anywhere. I mean, I would love to have been on one of these travel teams, I guess. But I don't know if they play any more than I did. And it costs a fortune.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it's just that's it's organized and you meet more kids across the country.
Yeah, well, yeah. I'd say I would love to have done it. I probably wasn't good enough,
yeah.
But... You should,
I know a kid who does jiu-jitsu. I financed his family like maybe two or three times. And they were so happy that they were taking the boy to some kind of competition in Florida. And you're one and done. And
wow.
They had it. They made reservations for the entire week. And the first game the kid did not win. And they decided just to come home then. Cancel the vacation and come home. Save the money.
One of my...
They were amazed that he didn't win because he does so well in the group that he's in up here. But it's when you get against other kids across the country, it makes a difference.
Yeah. all of a sudden you're like, the next level is, after all, the next level. I mean, one of my good friends, an attorney, he's still doing attorney stuff, even though he's, you know, fairly up there. But that was a great job. His two daughters married two brothers, you know, which is interesting. But they've done well. So let's say the family has done exceptionally well, and so have they. Their kids are into this hockey, and I can't even imagine what the budget is. They've been to Finland, they've been to Sweden. The kids are like 12, and they're already, the one daughter is being recruited for lacrosse at age 13. The colleges are all already looking at her.
Yep.
They're everywhere, the equipment and the travel, and it's I don't think I'm wrong here, Nance. I'm going to say the budget for the four kids is way into the six figures. Way into the six figures.
I'm sure. I mean, this is what I'm saying. So sometimes these soft jobs really help.
Where can I get a soft job that gets me six figures? What the hell would I be doing, robbing banks?
Well, no, but they do have some...
Yeah.
I mean, they have money set aside, but as you're saying, this is extraordinary, so they're going and doing it.
I was on
And then the soft job turns into a full-time second job because they want to do this, but it's not going to last more than a specific period of time.
I was on the all-star team in Little League. You know, the people end up going to Williamsport, and we practiced every day. We practiced for like...
That tells us how old we are, Tom.
Well, I mean, that's the World Series is still in Williamsport. And so we practiced every day for probably 4 hours, we were one league, and there was another league that was a little better than us. We played those guys, and we didn't do so well against them because they had some kid who was 6 foot was pitching. And we played one game up on the north side. We got our ass kicked, and that was it. We didn't make it. We didn't make it out of the city. We made it out of the neighborhood. We didn't make it out of the city. So like you say, the next level is the next level. So today, what does somebody have to? What rate could you get a good person today?
Probably around 6.5.
And that's down. The tippy top was what, 7.75, something like that.
Probably 8, if you were, you know, didn't have good, you know, if you're 100% down. I mean, 100% borrowing. So there's also risk based pricing that got you to 8.
All right, but. There's not many loans out there at 7.5 to 8, are there? Not a lot of people borrowed there and stuff?
Oh, my God, no. No. Probably 80% of the people are still somewhere between 2 and 3.25%.
Well,
so you've got the majority of the people, this didn't really have anything to do with them.
Where do you see it? Is the normal, I've got the 10-year at 3.96, all right, so call it 4-ish.
Mm-hmm.
2.5% premium seems a little high, isn't it? Is that what is it traditionally?
You know what, Tom? I can't answer that with a. I mean, I have my own thoughts on that, but I can't answer that question because there's so much that has gone into effect that goes around that tenure. Like, President Biden put in effect that we have to give borrowers, lower base borrowers, a better pricing. You know, there's hits to the that get added on if you're 100%. Right, and because of those laws, I really can't comment on that anymore because I think where he's getting the money to do that is he's sticking it to the people that did do everything right. So I can't, that's a tough question. Because it's no longer, it was before you kind of knew it was going to be, you know, 2% above the 4-year, but I mean the 10-year, but not anymore.
Yeah, it seems a little rich, eh?
Right, because you're paying for this other piece in there, I believe, but I have no factual evidence to that.
Well, everybody said the savings and loans were so inefficient, yet the savings and loans paid people, I'm going to say 3.25% on their passbook because they couldn't have checking accounts.
And charged 5.25%. The rule was 2-3% over.
Yeah, it was like 3.25% and 6.25%, about six.
Yeah.
And I think they were more efficient than the mess is now.
Right.
And it paid for the building. Of course, nobody made $1 million in savings and loan. The people who worked there just worked there.
But now you really are showing your age. When did savings and loan go up?
Well, they were the what do you call it? Was it Resolution Trust, the 80s, right?
Yeah.
81, 82, and that whole mess there.
Yeah, right.
Anyway, Nancy, I didn't get to see you this weekend. We went to Gatto's. It was pretty good. Although they were like closing the joint up at 9:00. I was trying to watch the end of the Cub game.
Your
Sox. Oh, we got 1 minute. I'll give you a quick baseball story. The Sox, you know, obviously they're going to be the worst team ever in baseball. So I'm listening on the way home, and you know, Rand Coomer does the color for the Cubs, and he's really good. I think there can't ever have been a better team than Pat Hughes and Rand Coomer in the air, and so. The Cubs put in this reliever. Sox guy walks on like 4 pitches. So the Cubs are only up by 2. So, you know, you don't mean walking people. So the next guy swings at one in the dirt. And Coomer goes, "You just walked the guy in 4 pitches. Why are you swinging the first pitch in the dirt?" And he's a Cub guy. But he's like, so then the guy fouls one off and swings at 2 more in the dirt. And the guy goes, "You know, you wonder why a team's lost so many games. You walked the guy before him. They throw 4 pitches that aren't near the strike zone, and the guy strikes out." How do you do that? What kind of minor leagues? Anyway, it's the state of baseball today, and I'm sure the kid thinks he was okay swinging away at that stuff. I don't get it. But so Nance, we got to. So you got your Bear tickets? You got your Skybox stuff?
I'm waiting for you to get the box, Tom.
Oh God!
As soon as you get it, I'll be there.
I've never been in a Skybox at Soldier Field. Been Cubs,
I
Cubs
was
Park,
on a tour, and I saw them, and they were really nice.
Oh, I'm sure. But, you know, those things were $2,000 a ticket 8 years ago, and they're 20 seats.
Yeah, well, Tom, this is your dream, so if you get the side box, I don't really have to care about that cost of the ticket. You do.
Well, I tell you what, my
get
dream...
get to work and make some money for us all, okay?
I think your dream and mine would be to have 20 clients worth $2,000 to take to a football game.
Yeah, really.
I mean, how much money would they be giving you? I don't charge my people that much. They'd rather have me charge them less than take them to a football game, I think. You too. I mean, anyway, hope to see you soon. S&P futures up 13.
Okay,
S&P futures up 53. Maybe we'll keep this going. Back tomorrow, Stocks and Jacks.
That's all, folks.